All right, greetings. Welcome in. It's Better's Last Stand, show number 123, coming to you on the Watchdog Network from the Pine Room Watchdog Studios in downtown Wheeling on a, I guess it's an unseasonably warm March day. We haven't even got to March Madness yet, and already it's a little bit too warm for me out there. So it's actually kind of getting hot. Luckily, it's nice and chilly in our studio here, so I don't have to worry about that. I can still wear normal garments for this time of year, but it would definitely be a shorts and a t-shirt type day, or short sleeves of some kind if you're going to be outside, no doubt about it. We're looking to stay hot in the betting landscape of things, not necessarily on the weather, but we're going to try and get you some winners here this week. So thanks again for joining us here on the Watchdog Network and on the Pine Room Studios YouTube page, or anywhere you listen to Pine Room Studios products and our shows. And you can find those at pineroomstudios.com, of course, in the Pine Room Studios YouTube page, as well as we got watchdognetwork.com as well. So you got all different outlets to find Better's Last Stand. So thanks again for joining us. Hopefully you've been jumping on board with some of our winning runs that we've had over the last few weeks. And we kept it going again last week with a 49 unit up performance, about 49.60. We were up to the good last week, so that is always a strong thing with a golf ticket cashing for us. It was Russell Henley getting the job done for us at 50-1 at the Arnold Palmer Invitational. Had Daniel Berger in the top 20 and Shane Lowry seventh. So pretty good display from a lot of our guys. A few of our guys missed the cut, but overall, Russell Henley covered for all those guys, and we were up 49.60 units thanks to him at 50-1. So we were a little bit south of par in our other plays last week. So it definitely wasn't our best. Soccer, we were just 7-7-2 in the EPL, and that's a little chilly for us lately. EPL again 7-7-2. We were 3-4-1 in the Champions League. 99-59-5, 61% over the last 10 weeks in the English Premier League soccer play. 71.25 to the good there as far as units go. 13-7-1 run in the Champions League right now, up 19.15 units there. NASCAR had Kyle Busch in the top 10. He had a pretty decent car again, but Chris Bell stuns everybody. Wins three times in a row. I'm assuming that's the first time since Jimmy Johnson. I don't know. Maybe Kyle Larson did, but I don't think. But Jimmy Johnson, Jeff Gordon type stuff there as he wins his third straight race in the NASCAR Cup Series. Hard to think he can continue that, as many good drivers as there are out there. But he is red hot. He was one of the guys we circled on our sheet for the NASCAR championship, but that's ways away. We don't do doing that till November, so hopefully he's not using up all his good luck here right now and won't be there in November. We definitely would expect that out of him. He's had incredible talent, just hasn't been able to put it all together and stay out of trouble, keep away from mistakes. College basketball 4-4 once again. Just can't seem to get above 500 with that. It's just an up and down situation. 2-2 in the AFL. A couple games canceled, of course, because of the cyclone, which kind of sucks. Indian Wells tennis 3-4. Tell you, we had one tennis winner, Mira Andreeva. She was up 5-0 in the first set, and I don't know. She only ended up winning at 7-5. So that kind of submarine. I thought we had an easy cigar smoker there, but she gets the job done, but doesn't get the job done for us nonetheless. But 49.6 units to the good over the weekend. I guess you can't really complain about that. If you're turning a profit in this business, that is a good thing, and we continue to try and give our very best here. So, all right, so let's focus in on a few things here. We're going to talk a little bit about the NHL, talk some baseball, lots of college hoops today, golf with the Players Championship coming up. We got NASCAR, and F1 makes its debut, and wow, Atletico Madrid with an early goal against Real Madrid in the Champions League knockout stage, round two, leg two. So good game on there. So we got both teams to score, I believe, in an over in that one. So we're happy with that one. Hopefully it turns out better than Lille did, as Atletico scores less than a minute in. Lille scored about 4 minutes in and never scored again, and really dominated play, took a bad penalty, and ended up being a loser for us. So a very frustrating game. If you watch soccer often like I do, you know, a lot of times you can just appreciate the games and the way that they turn out, even if you don't win them. But that was one that you feel like you had the right side and you don't get it there, and it's like you have all these chances and this doesn't turn out. So those can be the most frustrating. It's one thing if you just get your ass kicked from the start, then you're all right with it. But if you feel like you had the right side and things just didn't go your way, it can be quite frustrating. That is for sure. All right, taking a peek here at the NHL. Now, the NHL trade deadline was last week, and, you know, you start to figure out which teams are serious contenders, which teams aren't. Obviously, the Dallas Stars and the Florida Panthers, both 6-1 now to win the Stanley Cup. Both of them made some serious roster upgrades. You know, Brad Marchand going to Florida. Seth Jones goes to Florida. The Carolina Hurricanes flip Rantanen and send him to Dallas. And he signs a massive deal. And Dallas made a couple other, smaller moves too. So both of those teams showing that they're coming after it. The Edmonton didn't do a whole lot. I'm not a buyer on them at all. I think 8-1 is a ridiculous price on them. Colorado, I'm not sure they have it all figured out either. Star power carries them a little bit. 10-1 seems a little short for me for them, but I could see how they could make one. One team, you know, Washington, the Capitals, made a couple of small moves throughout. They get a couple guys from the Penguins. And I still think Washington's in a good position to make a deep run in the Eastern Conference. They just seem like the most stable team. They have the most cohesion. They got good goaltending, and they got Ovi, and he's on a tear right now. And this goal mark's going to fall here any day now. And it's been a spectacular run for him, and a spectacular run for the Washington Capitals. And if you go back to the Four Nations, they didn't even have a guy on any of the teams. It's just kind of silly. But I like Washington a little bit, but 11-1, maybe a tad short. Tampa Bay at 11-1. I can't dismiss them. I'm not a Carolina person. I just don't. Something's just not right about Carolina, and when it comes to the postseason, I think Vegas at 12-1 is a pretty good bet. I think they're very strong in the West. Winnipeg still concerns me offensively, and will Hellebuck be able to perform in a big game? I'm not so sure. I would pass on Winnipeg at 12-1, and then you're getting down to teams like the Kings and the Devils and the Wild. And, you know, the Wild have been a team that I've been wanting to back for a long time. I just can't. Vancouver, another one, just not serious enough about them. Ottawa, so-so, just goes, they go games without scoring. Same with Detroit. A lot of these teams just aren't dangerous enough to consider. And I think that, you know, you go back up to the top of the board and you're looking at, like, here we go. It looks like, to me, it's a Washington-Vegas. Maybe they rematch. The year that the Caps won the Stanley Cup, they beat the Vegas Golden Knights. Perhaps that's a rematch that you want to start to look at. I'm going to give it a couple more weeks, maybe 10 more days or so before I put together a couple future bets that I'm going to play, you know, play for the stretch run here. But Florida, to me, is going to be very strong. I don't know if Matt Tkachuk can stay, you know, if he can get healthy and stay healthy. He just seems so beaten down right now. That's a big worry if you don't have him. But I want to say Florida's still in there. Dallas, I just don't quite trust them yet. In Edmonton, I have no use for. Colorado price is too low. So I'm looking in there at Washington, Tampa, and the Vegas Golden Knights as teams that I would be semi-interested in. But like I say, we're going to give it a couple more weeks to sort it out with the way teams, you know, come together when they get their new acquisitions. So nevertheless, NHL playoffs right around the corner. I'll be looking forward to giving out some plays on that, no doubt about it, and some series plays and things like that. So we're looking forward to hockey coming to its climax, I guess. And there's an early goal for Arsenal. Imagine that. They've just destroyed PSV. It's now 8-1 on aggregate. But back to hockey action. Of course, trade deadline is done, but ECHL is back in action. The Oilers got beat today in the school day game against Trois-Rivières, so that was not a good start to the week. They'll be home for three this weekend against Fort Wayne and Cincinnati over at West Bank Arena. Can go over there tonight and check out a Frosty Friday, and then they got a St. Patty's Day special, I believe, on Saturday. So lots going on over there at West Bank Arena. I think they have I think they'll have PBRs coming soon, and lots of things going on over at the arena, and the Nailers, at the forefront of that. It'd be nice to have them back in town this weekend for some action. Hopefully they can get things going again. They hit kind of a little bit of a rut, and, that happens, especially at the ECHL level when your roster turnover is extremely high and you just have a lot of things changing throughout the day, throughout the week, throughout, you know, each and every day, basically. And obviously month to month it changes immensely. But day to day, month to month, year to year, it's a grind for those guys. And I give them a lot of credit to be able to dig in and battle back and refocus. And they do a really good job with that. Coach Army will have them ready to go. I'm confident in that. MLB spring training, we're down to about a week to go here. We got the opening game of the season coming up on the 18th and 19th. That will be in Japan. So those are next Tuesday and Wednesday. And then it's opening day in full force, I believe, on the 27th. Not a whole lot of differing opinions right now. Of course, the Yankees losing Garrett Cole for the season. I don't think it's as big a loss as everyone else does. I don't know how healthy he would have been all season anyway. And, you know, I'm not enamored with him at this point of his career. I never was. I thought he was a number two, three type pitcher. I know people think he's got number one stuff, and maybe he does, but he's not really ever proven that. And he didn't get the job done last year in the World Series. And I think the Yankees are going to be up against it. They're maybe under for their wins. I don't know. I don't want to go that route yet. You know, I'm high on Boston. Lukewarm on the Orioles. I think the Orioles will have a decent lineup, of course. Pitching is a massive concern for them. Bullpen should be a little bit better with Bautista coming back. Red Sox looked like they upgraded the bullpen a little bit. Starting pitching, very good. Lineup, very, very good. So you already know, if you missed any of the plays that I had for baseball earlier, I will recap all those next week as we get ready for MLB opening day. It'll be nice to have that coming along here along with the March Madness that we'll talk about next week too. But I'll recap everything. Obviously, I'm very high on Jaron Duran and some of the other Red Sox guys to eclipse their totals in certain stat categories. I thought Duran was a under-the-radar MVP guy. Crochet for wins and for strikeouts, and Cole Reagans and Brandon Fought. And those are some other guys that I was interested in from the pitching standpoint. So I gave those out a couple shows back. If you want to go back and check those over and see if you like anything that I like, go ahead. If not, go BLS_PRP. You can find all the plays that I have on here posted, even plays that don't make it to the show. Plays that are going to go before the show happens, all that kind of stuff. So next week, I'm probably going to give out my division winners and recap all the early futures that I gave out with the win totals. You know, I'm high on the Red Sox, on the Reds, on the Nationals, all those teams. So we'll recap all that next week. College basketball, let's shift over to there here on Better's Last Stand, show number 123. You got a few more days of conference tournaments to go here, and then it is time for the big boys. It is time for the March Madness event known as the NCAA tournament, and everybody's favorite thing. And, you start looking at these teams and who is on the bubble and who is, you know, being considered as a team that could be a danger. And I'm looking at these teams. The last four in right now, according to Joe Lunardi, last four in: Oklahoma, Indiana, Xavier, Ohio State. I get Indiana now because they just beat Ohio State, but Oklahoma's got no business being in this tournament. They're not very good. Xavier, not very good at all. Ohio State, just so-so. I'm just stunned that you can't find better teams in. Last four right now looks like Utah State, Arkansas, Baylor, and San Diego State. Now, this came as a surprise to me, is that apparently WVU's not even on the bubble. So, I mean, I know you're listening to this on the Watchdog Network. We are the home of Mountaineer basketball. And I was surprised that, like, Tony Caridi was pregame, and Mountaineers are in the tournament already. It's like they're already set in stone. I find that hard to believe. But I mean, I guess their resume from the early in the season, but those teams didn't pan out to be very good. You know, Kansas is just so-so, and Gonzaga's just so-so. I don't know. Maybe Gonzaga winning last night against St. Mary's is helpful, but I was kind of surprised. I thought the Mountaineers would have to at least win a game or two in the Big 12 tournament to even have a chance, and you could have bid stealers coming in there. But I don't know. I'm just very disgusted with all this. College sports to me has just been ruined beyond imagination. Football, the playoff thing was terrible. This is starting to get ruined. This was the best sporting event, period. And it is slowly deteriorated. But I don't know. Try to be positive about it. Next, first four out: Boise, North Carolina, Texas, Colorado State. Texas is awful. Have no business being in there. Colorado State is not good at all. Boise State, I think, is actually not terrible. So I would say they would be in over Oklahoma or Xavier, Ohio State, and especially over North Carolina, Texas, and Colorado State. That's just my opinion from what I've watched. I do think Utah State's a team that should be in. I do think Arkansas should be in. I think San Diego State should be in. Not so sure about Baylor. But if Baylor can't be in, I mean, they beat the Mountaineers. That'd be relatively – well, I think it was kind of a close game. But if Baylor's on the bubble, how are the Mountaineers not – next four out, you got Dayton, Wake Forest. Looks like Cal Irvine and Cincinnati. Cincinnati, done. See ya. They get stomped by Iowa State. They don't belong there. This team's been really bad. They've lost four out of five to end the season. Shut it down. Wake Forest, garbage. Dayton, garbage. Irvine, I would say, has a really good – they're tough. I like them. I think they're a dangerous team. I think I'd like to see them get in there matched up against one of these Power 5 pretender fraud teams like Texas, Oklahoma, Baylor, you know, those sorts. But I don't know. It's an irritating situation. You got, you know, 68 teams in this field, and I feel like you're not really going to have the best 68 teams in there. You never really do. Sometimes it's because of automatic bids, but the selection of the at-larges are what really bother me. So on to a couple of tournaments this weekend, teams that I was keeping an eye on, maybe anything that I really liked. I gave you New Mexico a few weeks back. I thought they were decent. I said Utah State. That should be a pretty good Mountain West tournament. New Mexico plus 225. I thought they were kind of interesting. Utah State at plus 295. Houston, to me, cream of the crop in Big 12. I think they probably win that, unless Texas Tech perhaps would be the only team other than BYU that could maybe make a little bit of noise there. From the ACC perspective, it sure as heck looked like Duke was an absolute sure-in to win that tournament. So I'm sure by the time that you're listening to this, Duke will probably already be into the finals. I thought of the SEC, just because of the way the bracket set up, I thought Vanderbilt and Kentucky both had reasonably decent chances to go and make a run at big prices. Kentucky nearly 20-1. Vanderbilt's like 185-1. And you know, if it broke out to where they have a very manageable path of teams that they've beaten or lost tight games to all the way out to the final. Now, can they run it all the way out there and be able to beat an Auburn or whoever's waiting for them? But they could absolutely get a Tennessee. They've already have. So I thought their route made a lot of sense to be able to make it in 180-85-1. I thought they were worth a little bit of a – now, by the time you listen to this, they may be out of the tournament already. But I thought maybe at that price, that was a very, very good price, I thought, on Vanderbilt, a team that has won a lot of nice games in that league this year. Big Ten, Michigan State, we talked about them months ago, about how I thought they were pretty good. Then they went out west. They lost a couple games. I was thinking, oh, boy, maybe I was way wrong about them. But they're pretty battle-tested. They're pretty tough, and they're pretty well-coached. So I think they're worth a shake. Plus 235 to win the Big Ten. I'm not sure they can get that done. Maryland at plus 325. I have no interest in that. I don't like them on any neutral courts or on an away court. I like UCLA at 6-1. I thought they were somewhat interesting. Illinois, I keep saying, Illinois is one of these teams that's going to explode at times and look incredible, and other times they're going to look like they looked against Duke because they're young. But I'll tell you, if you want to start looking at futures for next year already, if Illinois adds like one more piece during this offseason, to me they're a massive contender in the Big Ten and in the NCAA tournament as a whole next year. They got some very good young players on that team, and I like them quite a bit. No interest in Michigan, Wisconsin, Purdue. I took it weeks ago. I told you. Really, the Big Ten only has a couple of teams that, to me, could even threaten in the NCAA tournament, and that's Michigan State and UCLA. Everybody else in this league, I think, is vulnerable to some extent. So that's how college basketball for the men's side is shaping up. Gave out some plays a few weeks ago about teams that I thought maybe could make Final Four runs. I was sticking with those. I still think you can still get some interesting numbers on a few of the teams. But right now, it really seems clear-cut that your Duke, your Houston, your Auburn. And I'm not saying, you know, every year we have upsets. So you can't say, well, that this is going to be a year we won't have any of those. But you can really see that there is a massive difference and everybody else. Florida, too, a massive contender. Florida is a definite contender. Alabama is a contender, which, you know, they're a little up and down, but they could score enough that they're a contender. Tennessee, I dismiss immediately. I think Michigan State still 20-1, and St. John's, a team we've been very high on here on the show. St. John's, Michigan State, I think both of them could win their tournaments. I think Auburn's road is going to be tough. Duke should win the ACC tournament. Florida's road will be tough because of that league. Houston should win the Big 12 tournament. Maybe Iowa State's playing a little bit better right now. Kentucky, I think, has a shot. Texas Tech, these are some teams that I think are credible. Kentucky, Texas Tech, no-go on Maryland, no-go on Wisconsin, no-go on Texas A&M, no-go on Arizona anymore, no-go on Gonzaga, even though they had a nice win the other night. Kansas 55-1 is laughable. UConn 55-1, no chance. Clemson, people very high on Clemson. I'm not. I think their guards are not good enough to win. Missouri, nah. Illinois, not ready. Purdue, no way. BYU, they run good enough stuff. Can they get stops? Can they rebound enough to win? I don't know. But I like them at 70-1. I take them over Marquette. I take them over Louisville at 80-1. I take them over Michigan at 100-1. I think Michigan's very, very dressed up and fake. St. Mary's, they showed me a little bit of a weakness last night. Don't like that. UCLA, I still think could catch fire. Ole Miss, I think with the right setup and the right bracket could catch fire. Memphis, 120-1 on Memphis. Even if you bet them to make the Final Four, I don't think that's a terrible play. And Arkansas at 150-1. We'll see what Arkansas can do in the SEC tournament, how they can play out and assure themselves to get in. New Mexico, 200-1. And those are the teams that I'm kind of, you know, Utah State, 300-1. They're not going to win it, but, you know, maybe you could get to a spot where you could hedge, you know, around the Final Four or in the final. But that's college basketball from the men's perspective. From the women's perspective, thought a few teams stuck out to me that I was looking through. The number one seed is likely to be UCLA, South Carolina, Southern Cal, and Texas. UCLA, number one overall seed. They're plus 550 to win it all. Not even the top choice. That is Carolina, South Carolina, plus 290, followed by UConn at plus 310. South Carolina in the Birmingham region. UCLA supposedly going to be in the Spokane region. And then Spokane number two is going to be Southern Cal. Birmingham number two will be Texas. Those are the projections right now. A couple teams that interested me out of the Spokane number one bracket in UCLA's bracket, the three seed, Kentucky, 150-1 to win it, 40-1 to get to the Final Four. I looked at their trajectory, and you know, they seem like a team. They got very good point guard play. They shoot the ball pretty well. I think Kentucky, with the right matchups, could make a little bit of a run here. I don't totally discredit them for making the Final Four. I would say they have an outside shot here. Should UCLA, you know, stub their toes somehow, doubtful that they will, but, you know, maybe, just maybe, Kentucky is a team that plays hot. They would have to get by NC State, likely. NC State's 40-1. They didn't look so great over the weekend. Duke playing exceptionally well right now. So Kentucky, though, at 150-1 and 40-1 to make the Final Four, I thought was worth it. NC State at 40-1 to win it all. Maybe a nibble, but I'm not sure that they're as good as they have been the last 2 years. South Carolina's region, again, they're plus 290 to win it all. But Notre Dame's down at the likely three seed there. Notre Dame are the team that was number one for a lot of the year. They have wins over USC and wins over Texas. So, I mean, that is a pretty strong, you know, set of cards there, I would say. Notre Dame's 7-1 to win it all. They're plus 150 to make the Final Four. I think that really has a shot. TCU would be who they would need to get by. That should be a very good game. 70-1 on TCU to win it all. Not sure they can. They probably maxed out. They win the Big 12 tournament and look pretty good doing it. Not sure they can continue that run. But South Carolina, not as good as they have been. I think Notre Dame could possibly get them. So I think the Irish are plus 150 to make the Final Four a worthwhile bet in the women's tournament. And Spokane Region 3, this is Southern Cal's bracket. They are 6-1, the number one seed in that one. Thought Duke, the number two seed, 50-1 to win it all. I thought that was not a great price, it was a good price. I thought it was an unfair price for Duke to make the Final Four, 14-1. Duke playing really well down the stretch. I like what I'm seeing out of Kara Lawson's team. So I'm thinking 50-1 and 14-1 just to make the Final Four. Southern Cal is one player dependent, and as you've seen in these tournaments, you have got to get your team involved. And with just Juju Watkins, there's times where, you know, she may not be perfect and they could get beat. So I would be very worrisome if I was a Southern Cal fan if I have to play Duke. So we'll see what Duke can do. I like them at 50-1, 14-1 to make the Final Four. And then in the Birmingham 2 region, that will be Birmingham 4, sorry. Texas is a 6-1 top seed. They are 6-1 to win it all. Tennessee, Coach Kim, not ready yet, 120-1 as a 5 seed. That's a really great season, though, out of her. Hopefully she can win at least the game against projected to play Ball State. WVU men, women who you can hear right here on this network on the Watchdog, and we had Coach Kellogg on the show a couple of times. They are 200-1 to win it all. Again, I think they can win a game, but I'm not sure how much further they can go. But I thought UConn down there, the number two seed, plus 310 to win it all. They're minus to make the Final Four, so they're actually favored in this region ahead of Texas. Texas will probably be, and there's a goal by PSV. They'll only need to score six more. These poor fans, they're traveling over from Amsterdam to go crazy, or Eindhoven, to go crazy in a game. They're getting killed, but good for them. UConn, 3-1 to win it all, and they're the favorite in that region against Texas. So that would be a heck of a game right there. But, yeah, I mean, you can kind of see UConn to make the Final Four. They're favored for a reason because of Gino Auriemma, and that makes a lot of sense. So, anyway, I'll have those plays posted as well. And we'll get ready for the women's tournament, which the field will be coming out. It's hard to make any exact predictions on any of these until you see the total brackets and how they really shape out. But, you know, for argument's sake, those are some teams that we want to keep an eye on going forward. Okay, so let's switch. While we're on college basketball right now, let's stay on this. If you're familiar with this betting system, the 12-5, 13-4 betting system for the men's NCAA tournament. Now, that is the 12 seed over the 5 seed, the 13 seed over the 4 seed. I know people are always aware that, you know, there's been a lot of upsets from the 12s and the 13s over the years. But what you might not be aware of is how profitable it really has been. If you have bet the 12 and 13 seeds against the spread and on the money line blindly over the last 16 NCAA tournaments, you have turned a profit in 12 of those, including last year. ATS-wise, 75-53 the 12 and 13 seeds have been. That's 58%. With last year's teams against the spread covering and not winning, UAB and Samford, 17 units to the good during that time period. Money line wise, it gets even better. You got a 41-85 run right now, money lines. And yeah, you'll say that doesn't seem good, but these prices are really big. You had three outright winners last year from the 13s and the 12s. You had Yale at +525 beating Auburn, who's obviously the top seed in the whole tournament this year. They beat them. Number 12 seed Grand Canyon at +205 beat St. Mary's. And then number 12 seed James Madison also at +205. Beat Wisconsin last year in the first round. So the profit is there. 12 out of the last 16 years, you've turned a profit. You're up 18.75 units on the money line. You're up 17 units against the spread. So you combine those two together. Every one of your money line winners was also a winner on the spread. Now, not every single one of your spread winners was a winner on the money line. But you do the math, it's a pretty good setup. And these numbers are approximate depending on what you actually book the action at. But in consensus plays of what these teams went off at, again, 12 and 13 seeds, the 12 versus 5, 13 versus 4 game in the first round of the NCAA men's tournament. 12 of the last 16 years, you have turned a profit in these, including last year. ATS was 75-53, 58% with UAB and Samford covering last year as 12 and 13 seeds, up 17 units. Money line 41-85. Last year, you had three of them. Yale, the 13 seed at 525. Grand Canyon, the 12 seed at 205. And James Madison, the 12 seed at 205. Up 18.75 units on those money line plays. So keep those in mind. I'm not necessarily saying you should bet it blindly, but these numbers say that you should. So if you do that, you play the spreads, you play the money lines, make sure you're looking for the best numbers out there. Get 4 and 5 different apps ready to go. Get that stuff ready for next Thursday. You should be doing that when you're listening to this on the weekend. You should be taking an hour out of your day, and you should be going, and you should be getting every app that you have access to in your state and get it loaded on your phone, throw a few dollars in there, and be ready to go. That's what you want to do. You want to shop for the best numbers on all these because that's going to be at a premium. When you're turning out 18.75 units to the good, you got to make sure you're getting the best of the best. You want the best of the number all the time. So I thought that was an intriguing number for sure. I'll remind everybody of that again next week here on Bettors Last Stand, show number 123 here on the Watchdog Network, coming to you from the Pine Room Studios in the Watchdog Network Studios in downtown Wheeling here on a very mild March afternoon, getting you ready for lots of sporting action, lots of wagering action. We got Champions League soccer going on right now. We got plenty of soccer to talk about later in the show. Racing is now in full swing. Hockey playoffs are nearing. March Madness is right around the corner. MLB opening day is right around the corner. I mean, this doesn't get any better. AFL round number one, the full card this week. Tons going on here at the Watchdog Network and at Bettors Last Stand. And in the sporting calendar as a whole, that is for sure. Wheeling Central girls action, we've had that all week long from the state tournament. As they continue their run, we'll have them the entire way on the Metro News feeds. We also have the Central boys in action, and we will follow them through their journey as well. You can catch all those games at watchdognetwork.com for sure. D2 basketball had a Mountain East tournament last week, had Fairmont upsetting West Liberty. Had Fairmont women taking down Glenville in the finals. If you didn't see the West Liberty game, wow. One bad beat, though, from that. goes in my bad beat section for the week is these OT games for unders. They're critical. So, you know, and I know better than this, and I've still been stupid about it. But unders in games that you think are going to be close, whether it's two bad teams on the Tuesday ACC play-in tournament, if you think the game's going to be close or the data suggests that it will be, sometimes betting these, especially in winner-go-home scenarios, betting them under is very, very risky. So I'm going to start to make a better effort to not do that. Yesterday, for example, California and Virginia Tech in an ACC battle. Yeah, nothing says Atlantic Coast Conference like the California Berkeley Golden Bears and the Blacksburg Chicken Turkey Neck Hokies. So anyway, that game, an easy cigar-smoking under. Almost as easy as the Pitt-Notre Dame game, which was like 111 or something. And it goes double OT. You know, we got by the first OT, but no, not the second one. So that one stinks. If you had the Fairmont-West Liberty game under, that game looked like it was in the last 35 seconds of that game before Fairmont tied it with the late tip-in. To me, it was looking like a lock that West Liberty was going to win them on the money line. Fairmont was going to cover the 5.5, and the game was going to stay under the 174.5, I think I had it at. But whatever it was going to stay. It was going to be money line, spread, and total, and it totally turned a different way. It ended up being Fairmont money line, Fairmont plus the points, of course, and then easily flying over in a 122-114 triple OT game. So, again, when you play unders in a scenario like that with two evenly matched teams, you can get burned. But back to the point at hand, D2 basketball Atlantic Regional up at West Liberty this weekend. We have odds on those. Those begin tomorrow up at the ASRC. They are the number one seed. It's West Liberty taking on Bluefield. That at 6 o'clock. West Liberty minus 11.5, the total 194.5. Devin Hearn, the former West Liberty standout guard. He is the coach of the Bluefield Big Blues. So it's be cool to see Devin back up there in the ASRC where he made a lot of shots and played a part in a lot of wins for West Liberty over the years. That'll be a 6 o'clock game tomorrow. I believe Coach mentioned we may try to carry that here on the Watchdog Network. So we'll try to clarify that, have the social media posts. Again, you can follow us at Watchdog WV, WatchdogNetwork.com. At the Pine Room Studios for all that stuff as far as game schedules and things going on the network. You have the 3-6 game. It's Virginia State Trojans minus 6.5 against the Westchester Rams, the 6th seed. 150.5 the total on that one. A 12 o'clock tip at the ASRC for that one. 2:30, it's the number 7 seed East Stroudsburg Warriors against the number 2 seed Gannon Golden Knights, both out of the PSAC. Gannon minus 10.5, the total 178.5. In that one, as I said, West Liberty, the 6 o'clock game, they are the number 1 seed. They will take on number 8, Bluefield. It's 11.5, the spread for West Liberty, total 194.5. And then Fairmont, the Mountain East champions, who really didn't get gifted a good seed here. If they beat a tough Fayetteville State team, then they got to play possibly West Liberty again. So I think Fairmont was kind of shafted, if you ask me. Fairmont minus 5.5 as the 5 seed. I do have them favored. I have them slightly better than Fayetteville State. 153.5 is the total. West Liberty, the plus 135 favorite to win that Atlantic Regional, followed by Gannon at plus 215. Virginia State at plus 450. Fairmont at 525. Fayetteville State at 7-1. Westchester at 35-1. Bluefield at 40-1. And East Stroudsburg at 50-1. Again, you can check all these out and bet action on the weekend for the D2 Atlantic Regional up at West Liberty if you go over to the Wheeling Island Hotel Casino Racetrack and Sportsbook. We'll be happy to assist and take care of your wagering needs for D2 basketball as we did all week. And again, it was really well received last week. We had a lot of action. Handle was the best we've ever had. And it was really, really fun to have that stuff. Industry news here on Bettors Last Stand, show number 123. Didn't have a lot. Didn't have any of the crime stories breaking or anything. I saw Jontay Porter's sentencing got moved until December. So nothing really to talk about there as they continue to investigate. But things are kind of, it's like calming down now for a second before the NCAA tournament kicks off here. Lots of people will be interested in gathering data about how much the handle is going to be. It's going to be record setting across all the states that have legalized sports betting. So really excited about that. One thing I wanted to point out from last week's tournaments, last week's Missouri Valley tournament, also known as Arch Madness for St. Louis, the Gateway Arch, of course, saw the unders go 10-1. There was one over in the whole tournament, and there were some massive moves towards the under in this. I mean, there was a 12-point move on a total, which people were just sinking money into it. The shooters shooters landscape at some of these arenas are really tough. And I've always kind of been an under. That's why I had that under in that Cal and Virginia Tech game yesterday. And just like the Pitt Notre Dame, I mean, those guys couldn't make any shots. Like it was a really ugly basketball. And you know, you're getting a landscape the guys aren't used to shooting at in these big arenas, and it can be tough to shoot for sure, especially the first game of the tournament for each team. One better in MGM already wagered $100,000 on the Florida Gators to win the national title at 9-1. Boy, that would be a nice ticket to cash there. And how about this one from the world of Mountaineer football, which you can hear right here on the Watchdog Network each and every week throughout the college football season. You can hear this press conference shows and all the pregame stuff and all the other specialty shows on the Mountaineer Sports Network with Tony Caridi. Rich Rodriguez bans his players from dancing on TikTok videos, sparking questions over the employee status of athletes. Now, I'm not a Rich Rod guy by any means, but I give him a lot of credit here. I like this approach. I like this no-nonsense type stuff, and it's good to see. And what it does make me think, and it made me think of this all along, is these guys are employees. They have been employees for quite a while. So I don't know what penalties people are subject to, terminations. I don't know. But to me, this is just like a job when you're getting NIL money. Now, I don't know how it works for guys who are only on scholarship and not getting the added incentive. So lots of things to work out. And once again, the NCAA always thinking ahead. They had no idea this would happen. They are idiots. But Rich Rodriguez, full credit to you, my man, for trying to keep your guys off TikTok. I think that's a very, very good step in a great showing of leadership there from the Mountaineer head coach. So we'll see how that progresses. Fox looking to take over ESPN's rights to MLB. ESPN scrapped MLB. Don't really know why that is. The NBA rankings are in the toilet. ESPN maybe has the worst catalog of shows ever right now, and you're gonna get rid of. I think you're getting rid of Around the Horn, which is actually a show that actually had some thinking on it, and you have PTI, which has some thinking on it and some good debate. Other than that, it's total trash, and I stay away from that network at all costs unless there's a game on that I absolutely have to watch or need to watch. And Club Brugge gets a red card. And not good. Oh, boy. Not when you have teams that you need to score goals. So Champions League football not looking as good as we hoped. But that's all right. We were up 49.6 units last week. We'll try and get it done in another way. Not in Champions League football. All right, let's shift over to golf here on Better's Last Stand, show number 123 here on the Watchdog Network. Getting you ready for a Friday evening. And I believe you'll have Wheeling Central basketball. It's either before us or after us. Not certain of the game time of that, but Wheeling Central girls in action in the state tournament. So we wish them the best of luck and continued journey. And maybe that might have been last night. I think it was Thursday, and then they're set for Friday. Set for Saturday morning. So I believe, hopefully, by the time you're listening to this, they are in the finals. And I believe that's a early start, maybe at 10 a.m. down at the Charleston Civic Center Coliseum. All right, the Players' Championship, this is known as the fifth major. It's at the TPC Sawgrass, the stadium course in Ponte Vedra Beach, Florida. Really nice course, really cool atmosphere, 17th hole, of course, the island green. Everybody knows that. It's beautiful. It's really cool to see all the balls going in the water and just to think about you as an amateur golfer, how many times it would take you. If you had 100 balls, how many of them would you put in the drink? Probably like 80 of them. But yeah, maybe someday the Pine Room guys will get to do that. That would be pretty fun. But down to business. I have these posted all the time ahead of time because I know you don't hear these until Friday. Tournaments usually start on Thursday. BLS_PRP is where you want to be at. I post them ahead of time before I make my bets. But don't be scared off. Like if you see a guy, you know, hovering around the lead or hovering three or four shots off, you can actually sometimes get a better price. And we've seen guys that if you would have bet them on Friday or Saturday, you actually would have got better prices and they've gone on to win. Russell Henley was one of them guys last week. So, yeah, so keep that in mind. All right, guys that we like at the top of the board for me, Ludwig Aubert, game is still really good. Wasn't his sharpest last out, but you know, a couple times ago he got the money for us here on Better's Last Stand, so we're happy about that. 16-1, incredibly fair price there when you got guys like Rory McIlroy at 8-1 and Scottie Scheffler at 4-1. There's no chance I'm betting those. We'll be against those guys. Scheffler looks a little little bit off. Not that he's bad, but he's just a little bit off. So Ludwig Aubert at 16-1, I think, is worth it. That is a fair play because he's right now in the top three in the world, no question about it. I thought that Hideki Matsuyama around 28-30-1. He was sixth here last year. He was fifth here 2 years ago. He's been very, very good at this course, and I like the way Hideki's game is starting to come around. He was a little sloppy last couple of weeks, but I think he's just working on some things, getting ready for this tournament. Tommy Fleetwood 30-1. He has been in top 10 here two times. I like his game here. Can he finally get the job done? I don't know. I don't know if he can win, but I think he can get around the lead. Shane Lowry, been strong in Florida. He was 19th here last year. He's 35-1. We'll go with him. Daniel Berger, another Florida guy, 60-1 on him. We are playing him. As long as his form continues, we're using him every week because he's hovering around that top of that leaderboard each and every week. Adam Scott has had a lot of success here. He's 80-1. Can he win it? I don't know, but can he get a top 10 or a top 20? Absolutely. Justin Rose, 125-1. I thought that was a ridiculous price. Couple years removed from a top five here, so I think Justin Rose, who's played pretty well here to start the season and is staying healthy, I think he's got a really good shot. He knows how to attack good hard golf courses, and I trust Justin Rose will be in the mix at least for a top 20 as we head into the weekend. Michael Kim at 75-1, his game's been really good. I don't know a whole lot about him, but he's really looking sharp to start the season. Christian Bezuidenhout, he's been outstanding at this place the last 2 years. He's had back-to-back top 15s, been really, really good, had some very low rounds too, so I think him at 100-1 makes a little bit of sense. Adam Svensson, we used him a few weeks ago. He was not good, but I think his game sets up pretty good for this course. 250-1 on him. That's a bomber, so we're going to go with him. And then Aaron Rye, who has played some comparable courses pretty well, 66-1 on him. He finally broke through and won last year, so maybe we can get the job done with Aaron Rye at 66-1. So again, Bezuidenhout 100-1, Svensson at 250-1, Rye at 66-1, Aubert at 16-1, Berger at 60-1, Michael Kim at 75-1, Shane Lowry at 35-1, Hideki Matsuyama at 28-1, Tommy Fleetwood at 30-1, Justin Rose at 125-1, and Adam Scott at 80-1. If I was going to have to pick a winner out of any of those guys, I would probably take my top two picks would be Ludwig Aubert and Hideki Matsuyama, with Tommy Fleetwood being a close third. So that is the Players' Championship from Ponte Vedra Beach, Florida, getting the golf season into full swing with the best of the best coming out there. It is kind of silly, though, that the LIV guys can't play that because it's the PGA specialty event. So that kind of sucks, no doubt about that. I think it's just dumb because you're not really having the best field. Even though you have what should be the best field on one of the best courses, you don't really have the best field. So anyway, let's get the Masters here, and we'll have those LIV guys on tour with us here again relatively soon, I hope. All right, let's get over to the racing circuit here on Bettors Last Stand, show number 123. Again, we were up 49.6 units last week after cashing a nice ticket with Russell Henley in the Arnold Palmer Invitational. Getting ready for March Madness, we got soccer plays, which we've been red hot in the 60s percentage and up over 70 units in the Premier League, about 20 units in the Champions League. So what can we do in F1 racing? Well, last year, F1 started to have some parity for the first time in quite a while. Max Verstappen still wins the driver's title, but that was a good thing that he banked a lot of wins early in the season, because down the stretch, it was McLaren and Mercedes and Ferrari taking control of the podium each and every week. And can Max come back and take what is his once more, or will these teams be too tough to beat with the McLarens and the Mercedes? Now, You have some changes here that have gone on, and it's really, really weird to see that you will now be seeing Lewis Hamilton will now be racing for Ferrari, which is just so weird. But we'll get used to seeing Lewis in red for years and years. The only things you ever saw was Lewis Hamilton in either the black or the white, or the green. Sometimes they would use like green as an alternate color. But you never really would have ever seen Lewis Hamilton in red. And it was quite a shock to the system when you saw him climbing out of a red Mercedes car. And it's very, very odd seeing him and Charles Leclerc, who are now the team Ferrari. And then you have, McLaren, of course, maintains Oscar Piastri, and Lando Norris. Mercedes now has Kimi Antonelli and George Russell. So that's a massive difference too. Max Verstappen is now, his teammate is now Liam Lawson. So that is different. Carlos Sainz moves over to Williams. And Carlos Sainz, he won this race last year. Like, he won this race in a Ferrari. So can Lewis Hamilton duplicate that? I don't know. I think from what I'm seeing so far on the testing and so forth, everybody's saying the McLarens have the early edge. Now will the Mercedes and will the Ferraris and will the Red Bulls be able to keep, you know, up with them and improve as a season? It evolved quite a bit because Red Bull started out the strongest, and then it was a free-for-all, which was really great because you could actually have like 8 or 9 different drivers in contention each week, which is something we hadn't seen in a while. But I thought that Oscar Piastri, to me, at plus $7, plus $8, somewhere around 8-1, I thought he made a little bit of sense here because he's getting the same equipment, and to me, he's on a better trajectory than Lando Norris. It took Lando Norris probably 3 years to get where Piastri was like last year. And I think Piastri's advancing, and I do think he might end up being the better of the two drivers in the McLaren stable. So I would lean Piastri right now as my top pick here in the Australian Grand Prix. Again, I don't even think I mentioned that, but Australian Grand Prix in Melbourne. This is late Saturday night, early Sunday morning, so be sure and get this in Saturday afternoon or even better right now if you're listening to this on Friday. Piastri, to me, is the value on this. You got Lando Norris, the favorite, at plus 245. 330 on Charles Leclerc. Max Verstappen at plus 250. Lewis Hamilton at plus 565. Now, his car did win it last year with Carlos Sainz in the cockpit. So it's a little bit different, but good equipment. Ferrari ran 1-2 here, so that could be a sign of things to come. But I think if you're going to go McLaren, I think it makes a lot more sense to play Piastri. He, to me, is the up-and-coming guy on that entire circuit. I think he's really talented, and this is only his third year, and he was exceptional last year, getting wins and being in contention a lot, and he's learned a lot from year 1 to 2, and now year 2 to 3, I expect a massive jump from him to continue to improve. Thought George Russell was interesting at 12-1. Perhaps he is a guy who's going to be out there, you know, looking to say, I'm now the top dog at Mercedes, and I am going to dominate this, and I'm going to say Lewis Hamilton, who he had a pretty good car here last year, but he ended up crashing out. So I thought George made a little bit of sense at 12-1. But, you know, you just don't know how this is going to turn out. We'll look at qualifying. I'll post my final picks. Antonelli, who is the new Mercedes driver, is at 32-1, that is. So you got some new names in here. You got Jack Doohan. You got Oliver Bierman. You got Isaac Hadjir. And Gabriella Bortoletto. I mean, you got some fresh faces, some guys that, you know, it's going to take some getting used to. Liam Lawson, who was not a full-time driver but has driven in the circuit before. He's at 25-1 in this race. Not sure he'll be in contention. But I'm curious to see how he'll do because Sergio Perez gave Red Bull nothing last year. He was terrible. So maybe Verstappen, if he gets a good teammate this year and Liam Lawson can hold up, maybe that's a good turn upwards for Red Bull. So anyway, we're going with Piastri to win it at about 7-8-1. George Russell for the podium. Maybe take a shot with him to win it at 2 at 12-1. I'll have my official plays at BLS_PRP. Once again, it is F1 Racing at Melbourne. Back at it, Max Verstappen, the defending champion. But Carlos Sainz won this race last year, and they changed around the calendar a little bit. Aussie Grand Prix used to be the third one. They used to go to Bahrain and Jeddah, start in the Middle East, and then head down to Australia, but they're flipping that around now. So Melbourne will kick off the season. So should be a good one. Lots happening down there in Australia. It's a good thing it wasn't last week because of that cyclone. It would have been an absolute mad. They couldn't even ran this race. It would have been catastrophic. I mean, they can run in rain and wind, but not that kind of wind and not that kind of rain. All right, on the NASCAR here on Better's Last Stand, show number 123 here on the Watchdog Network. Thanks for joining us on a Friday afternoon or wherever you're heading, whenever you're listening to us. We appreciate it. WatchdogNetwork.com, Pine Room Studios, YouTube page, PineRoomStudios.com. Follow us at the Pine Room Studios and at Better's Last Stand, BLS_PRP on Twitter or X for all the plays, whether they're time sensitive or not. All right, Pennzoil 400 getting ready to take place, Las Vegas Motor Speedway. We stay out west. We were at Phoenix last week. Chris Bell wins for the third straight week at plus 450. How he's going to keep this up, I don't know. This is a great driver colony. I don't know how he's pulling this off, but he is doing a great job. And like we said, I picked him to be win the championship. But he was a little bit early, a little early to the party, Chris. I'd rather you be doing this in November when you could be cashing a ticket for us instead of getting all the wins out of the way in the early part of the spring. But can somebody knock him off this week? I don't know. He's 3.5 to 1. He and Kyle Larson both around 350 or so. They're installed as the two favorites. William Byron around 7.5 to 1. Tyler Reddick around 5 or 6 to 1. I think that's a tad bit low. Denny Hamlin coming in just under 10 to 1 as we head to Las Vegas. But just recapping a little bit about the Shriners Children's 500. Bell led 105 laps. He was probably much the best car. William Byron, another strong performance out of him. He led 85 of those laps. Joey Logano led 81 laps, which I thought was pretty good. Ryan Preece ran really well. Not a track that you would think he would be really good at, but he ran well. Kyle Busch, who's our pick, he did not get the job done, but he ran in the top 10 all day long. He was 8th. Ross Chastain had a good run for us in 11th. Didn't cash that top 10 ticket, though. Tyler Reddick was not great. He had some bad luck on pit road and some sequencing. Brad Keselowski and Chase Briscoe were not anything to speak of. Not pretty performances out of those guys. But we'll try to find a winner here. And in Vegas, this is a track that, you know, you've seen a lot of different winners here. Joey Logano won the race here in October. And then back in the spring race last year, it was Kyle Larson who led 181 laps. He was very, very strong that day. Denny Hamlin was also a contender in both these races. Joey Logano was in the top 10 in the first race and won the second one. So you have a lot of the same guys, a lot of the same names that are up and out and about and up near the top of the pylon. Daniel Suarez, a guy that we're going to talk about here. He's a guy at a big price that I think is worth a look. Kyle Busch comes in, he's around 20 to 1. He's got an 11.3 average here at this track. I think he's got a little momentum going right now. So I don't love his price here, but I think it's worth maybe a use, especially in the top 10 capacity. I think Kyle Busch could have another strong run. My top play for this week is going to be Joey Logano. He has a 9.5 average at Las Vegas Motor Speedway. He won this race last fall. As I said, he ran very well here in the spring race. And Logano is just he's a guy that just can win on any track. So I thought 13.5, 14 to 1 on him is pretty fair. Thought he really could be priced below Denny Hamlin and probably below maybe even William Byron. So I think if you're getting almost double that, you're better off taking Logano at around 13 or 14 to 1. So he's my top choice, followed by my 1B choice, which will be Alex Bowman. He's a previous winner here. He's got a strong 12.4 percentage finish, his average finish. He's around 20 to 1. So Bowman, I know that the Hendrick cars will be strong here, so I like Alex Bowman. So Bowman and Logano, my top plays, and then my intermediate guys. Chris Buescher has had an exceptional run. It's every week you look, he's just in the top 5. He had another top, I think he was in the top 5 again last week. He just continues to impress. Yes, he was 5th last week. Just really, really good. RFK, Keselowski's not been very good so far, but Chris Buescher getting back to his form from 2 years ago when he was a championship contender by all accounts. So I think Chris Buescher at 30-1, take a look at him for top 5 or top 10. He's just been very consistent to start the season. I really like where he's going. And not only does he have great form, he's got some strong finishes here too. So, a track that could still suit his driving style. His teammate, Brad Keselowski, he's about 30-1. Same with Brad. Brad hasn't been very sharp though lately. He's got a 12.7 career average here. That's very good. Has had some success at Las Vegas. So I'm going to take a shot with Brad at 30-1 to hang around and contend and at least get in the top 10 at some point, hopefully where he finishes. That's the idea. And then Daniel Suarez at 60-1, 15.3 average career. He's ran in the top 5 here the last two events. And Suarez is a guy who I think these kinds of speedways suit him quite a bit. And Suarez is a guy that he's going to win a race this year. I imagine he's usually good for like one win a year, and this could be the one. So 60-1 on him, I think it's worth a small peek. A couple guys that were also somewhat impressive last week. Josh Berry, 4th place finish out of him. Very, very strong. Thought he was really good. Zane Smith, a guy we talked about in the preliminaries towards Daytona, about a guy that's got some talent, and we're just seeing what he's going to do in this big ride and how he's going to progress. And Zane Smith ran 16th here in the fall, so he could be another guy that may be a massive under-the-radar look for Zane Smith to possibly get in the top 10 here at Las Vegas Motor Speedway. Noah Gragson also ran really well here in the spring race last year, along with Ty Gibbs. So Lots of racers to choose from. Again, we're going to go with Logano and Bowman as our top plays, followed by Buescher, Keselowski, and Suarez. Again, those will all be posted at BLS underscore PRP. May throw a ticket in on Zane Smith. I'm going to see how he practices. But at 270-1, possibly be a top 10 bet, and Noah Gragson around 141. I want to see how they show in practice, because if they're in the top 15 or something in practice of the first practice before they qualify, I'll probably take a shot with them at those giant prices. So that's the Pennzoil 400 from Las Vegas Motor Speedway. Should be a really good race, and we look forward to that. 3:30 on Sunday afternoon on Fox. Shifting over to tennis briefly, Indian Wells is a little bit weird because Indian Wells is now being backed up by rain, so that kind of messes up a few of the potential plays that I was going to try to give out because I don't know who's playing yet on the weekend. So that can be hard to prognosticate when you don't know. They started up play early today, so we'll see if they can get through a few of these. We gave out Medvedev a few, actually probably two shows ago, that I thought he would be very good. He has a match coming up last night, if you're listening to this on Friday, against Arthur Fields. Should he win that, he should be in a pretty good position to have a chance to possibly take down this title. We had Shurundalo as a winner last week. He came through and cashed for us. We had Gregor Dimitrov, I believe, and he's still alive as well. So maybe get a little traction going here, but it's hard to account for the rain and the delays and the match changes. Sabalenka looks pretty strong for the women's side of things. Jasmine Paolini has been playing really well. Her form's starting to come back in, so you got to like her. She has a match coming up, or it was last night, so hopefully if she advanced through, maybe we have a play on her. But check out BLS underscore PRP, and of course, Mira Andreeva, the young Russian, who is going to be something special. She's finally starting to grow into her body. She had her first top-end challenger win a few weeks ago, which we talked about. She's knocking on the door of starting to get into these major tournament finals, and she'll end up starting to knock them down here at some point. But so young, just 17, so long way to go for her. And sky's the limit, so we'll keep an eye on her. We gave her out as a definite contender, a person to watch in this tournament, so hopefully she's advancing. So BLS underscore PRP, I'll have any Indian Wells plays for the weekend that I like, assuming that the weather cooperates. And, you know, that's a place where they say it never rains, so it's rained like 5 days, but that's okay. A place where it does rain occasionally is Australia. We had a cyclone down there last week, but that doesn't damper our spirits. The AFL is back in full swing, and I am very, very excited about it. It is my most favorite sport to watch, and that's saying a lot because I really, really like soccer. But AFL brings you American football and soccer and about five other sports, hockey and football. Well, I guess I already said football. Baseball even to an extent. Basketball to an extent. It incorporates everything. It's got a little bit of everything. So I urge you, if you're up in the morning, if you get up early, if you can't sleep, Fox Sports, find it. Find the matches each and every week. You will not be disappointed. Give it a fair shake. Listen to the crowds. Learn about the game. And you will have a very enjoyable experience. And you know what? You can probably win some money on it too, because it is a very, very, very good sport to bet on. You have a ton of markets available. And the more you learn, the more options you will have. All right, let's start it off. It's a, that game, let's see, two games we would have missed here by the time the show airs, so I'm not even gonna put those ones on here, but we will have those on BLS underscore PRP, so you got to be ready. You got to have access to that. Even if you don't follow us, I don't really care. Just go in there and get the picks, because that's what this is all about, trying to turn some profit for you out there on the Watchdog audience and the audience of the Pine Room Studios. So here we go. It is the Fremantle Dockers and the Geelong Cats. It'll be the Cats minus 13.5, the total 172.5. This game at 10:20 p.m. on Friday night. So right after you get done the Nailer game against Fort Wayne, you head home, you pop on Fremantle and Geelong. Now that sounds like a great time to me. Two out of the last three in this fixture have went under the total. I like the Cats here. Now, they do have some changeover, some guys that are moving on. Tom Hawkins retired. That's a big loss for them. But they played a lot of the season without him last year. I thought Geelong came on pretty decently, and they got some decent young players. So I'm curious to see how they'll come back, if they'll be hungry They still have Patrick Dangerfield and Jeremy Cameron, two superstars. So I'm thinking Geelong will still be a good team here, probably a top six team throughout most of the season. Fremantle, I don't know what to make of them. I can never figure this team out. Some weeks they look strong, other weeks they don't. But I like Geelong here. I'll play Geelong minus a 13.5 at home to get off to a rolling start. Brisbane Lions at the Sydney Swans. This one at 1:15 a.m. That's late Friday night or early Saturday morning, however you want to look at that one. Brisbane minus 3.5. The total, 178.5. Now, Brisbane also going off some changes. They won this last year. We cashed the ticket here on Bettors Last Stand. It was a nice price. We had them for well in advance. I believe we cashed a 7-1. We had a 6-1 to make the final. We had several different tickets. It was a really, really good final few weeks of the AFL season for us, thanks to the Brisbane Lions. But they lose Joe Danaher, one of their better players, and a guy who played incredible in the semifinal and the final game, the grand final. He was awesome. He retired. So that's a little bit of a loss, but you still got Charlie Cameron. You still got Eric Hipwood. You still got Hugh McCluggage. You still got Lachy Neal. I mean, you still got a good team. So I think Brisbane is going to be pretty good this year. We like them up near the top of the table, no doubt about it, or the ladder, as they like to call it. Table would be for soccer, ladder for AFL. But if you remember last year, Brisbane started out very, very poorly. They were not the same team. By the end of the year, they had peaked. They do not peak early, and I think that's part of the way that their management and their coaching staff handles this. So I would not play them early in the season. They were 0-3, and they lost. I think they started out like 2-5-1 to start the season. So it was not a good start, and they definitely did go 0-3. So that was a little bit of a concern. So I will not be playing them here against Sydney. Sydney played last week. They were not good at all, and I don't like what I see out of them. So what I'm thinking about here, two of the last three have went under in this matchup. So I like under the 178.5 here. I don't think Brisbane will be clicking on all cylinders by any means. Whenever you lose a player like Danaher, that's going to reset how you do things a little bit. So I think they'll have some growing pains. I also think they won't be revved up like, you know, a horse ready to go for its top-end performance. Brisbane will have a slow build, knowing that if they just get into the finals, get into that, I think they were the fifth seed last year. If they can just get in there, they're going to be very dangerous, and I think they know that, and they have an experienced team, and that's how they'll govern themselves. So I think maybe a small lean towards the Swans in this game at 3.5, but they were so bad last week, it's hard to back them. Figure a game under the belt, they'll be a little bit better, but we'll go under 178.5 in that one. Saturday morning, it's the North Melbourne Kangaroos. We're a little bit high on them this year. They're at the Western Bulldogs. It's Western minus 20.5, total 176.5. Lots of people on North Melbourne here, which worries me a tad, but I like them too, so I'm going to play them plus the 20.5. I'm also going to play on the money line. Outside shot, maybe they can surprise Western here and beat them, but it does worry me that I've seen a lot of people tipping that as well. So North Melbourne and North Melbourne on the money line. Also going to go with points in this game. North Melbourne can score. Western can score. North Melbourne has had an issue with defense in the past. We'll see if they've clean that up at all, and we'll go over the 176.5 in the opener there at 4:35 a.m. on Sunday morning. Port Adelaide at the Collingwood Magpies. Magpies were awful last week. We had them. They were dreadful. Almost got doubled up by Hawthorne. So this week, it's Collingwood minus 8.5, the total 164.5. Again, a poor showing by Collingwood. They gave up 102, and the game still went under. So that's pretty crazy. I'm like the over in this game. Sorry. I think Collingwood will be a little bit better on offense, and their defense does not look like it is improving anytime soon. So 164.5 seems like a manageable total. Port Adelaide could score a little bit last year. Averaged, I think I want to say around 80, high 80s in for their games last year. So Port Adelaide could score. I like the game over 164.5. 9:30 p.m. start on Saturday night. This will be St. Kilda and Adelaide, the Crows. St. Kilda just can't score at all. It's Adelaide minus 16.5, total 159.5. Two of the last three in this matchup have stayed under. I think it stays under again. Adelaide not known to score. St. Kilda cannot score. Not much improvement from them in the offseason. 159.5, we will go under. St. Kilda will be an under team, it looks like, again this season. GWS, Greater Western Sydney Giants, they got in the win column last week. It's the Melbourne Demons. It'll be GWS minus 2.5, the total 164.5. I like the Giants here. The Giants were a team that we tipped to be up near the top of the league, maybe even the regular season winners. Going to be way, way up the ladder, no doubt about it. But we're going to go with them minus the 2.5 on the road at Melbourne. Over the 164.5 as well. As Melbourne has become a team that was, a few years ago, really, really good defense, not the greatest offense. Now they have a good offense and not a great defense. So what that says is over, 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 and GWS will gladly oblige as they like to play up-tempo games, and I think they will score a lot in this game. So we're going over 164 in GWS Giants on that one. That was at 12:20 a.m. on Saturday night, early Sunday morning. Sunday, 3:10 a.m., early start. It'll be the Gold Coast Suns at the West Coast Eagles. Gold Coast minus 10.5 on the road, a total 168.5. We'll go over the 168.5 here. West Coast, by most accounts, supposed to be a little bit better this year. We'll see if that is true or not. Gold Coast, well, they've been perplexing all year. We took them over the win total, so we'll hopefully get it off to a good start. We're going to go with the Suns on the road minus the 10.5, and that is AFL round number one here on Bettors Less Than. We're excited to have that back with us here, no doubt about it. And then finishing up the show, we'll go over to the Premier League, where we have been on a really good run, 99-59-5, 61%. Over the last 10 weeks, we're up 71-plus units. And we started off with Brighton and Hove Albion taking on Manchester City, an 11 a.m. start on Saturday. Man City minus 145. This opened about 160, down to 145 already. It's telling you people are starting to figure out City is mispriced. Brighton plus 350 on the pullback. Brighton or draw is where I'm going to go here. I think Brighton's played really good lately. They've won six straight games. Well, that's won six straight overall, not points in six straight. Won six straight. They've been outstanding. Going to go with Brighton or draw in this game. We're going to go with both teams to score. Both teams have scored in this fixture four out of the last five times. So Brighton, both teams to score, Brighton or draw in that one. West Ham at Everton, 11 a.m. on Saturday morning. It will be Everton plus 110. Yeah, Everton a favorite now regularly. 255 on West Ham. This is their Everton team is playing really well. They're unbeaten in their last five overall. Eight of the last 10, two goals or fewer in this fixture. I'm thinking a draw at plus 230 isn't a bad one. Maybe Everton or draw. And then I like the under if you can find 2.5. I wouldn't really want to play two because good chances could be 1-1. I mean, you're getting a push. That's not terrible. But if you can find 2.5 or 2.25 on your agent handicap, give that a shot. So we're going to go Everton or draw and the under in Everton and West Ham. Then it's Nottingham Forest at Ipswich Town. Ipswich plus 270. Nottingham, the road favorite, at plus 110. Nottingham just beat Manchester City 1-0. That was a game that I thought there'd be goals. There was not. Ipswich has lost four straight overall. And earlier this year, though, it was a 5-4 Nottingham win. So maybe some goals. I like goals. I played it over 2.5. Also played Chris Wood to score. This is the kind of game where you're going to get some poaching opportunities when you're a striker against Ipswich Town. And Chris Wood, who we've given out many times, he's not disappointed too often. He takes penalties, so very good shot that he'll score, excuse me, at a plus price right now on him. Hurry up and bet that one, because by the time Saturday morning rolls around, he'll probably be minus money to score a goal in that match against Ipswich Town. So again, it's Nottingham Forest and over against Ipswich and Chris Wood to score for Nottingham Forest. Wolverhampton Wanderers plus 110 on the road at Southampton. The bottom of the barrel here, plus 260 for them. Three of the last five in this fixture have stayed under the total. Southampton's lost five straight overall. That's no surprise. Wolves have actually been sneaky good on the road, which is weird. Normally, they played better at home, but Wolves is a little sneaky good on the road. I looked through their last six road matches, and they've been very, very good. A couple of losses to good teams, but tight losses and a couple of nice wins as well. So I'm going to go with Wolves, a plus price on the road against Southampton. I think Wolves are the better team, although they're inconsistent. Could be some goals in this match as well. So I'm going to go with the Wolverhampton Wanderers and the over in that one, a 2.5 against Southampton. Brentford at Bournemouth. Brentford plus 320 on the road. Bournemouth minus 135 at home. This is a little bit interesting. Both of these teams, their form is dipping a tad. Not bad, but dipping just a little bit. Even Bournemouth has not been as good. Clivert's cooled down. I'm not saying they're playing bad, but they're not as sharp as they were 3 or 4 weeks ago. Brentford, I think, is worth a shot at plus 320 here on the road. Bournemouth, as I said, not playing as strong. Brentford, same. Maybe they take a step back up this week. I like both teams to score. I think there'll be at least a 1-1, but I think a Brentford or draw play is very good. Both teams have scored in the last three meetings of Brentford and Bournemouth, so we're going with that. Brentford and both teams to score in that one. Tottenham and Fulham, the early game on Sunday morning, 9:30 a.m. It'll be Fulham minus 105. You can find some even monies on that too. Tottenham plus 235 on the road. Tottenham has won the last three in this fixture, and they are also winless in their last three overall. So I think I'm going to lean Fulham here. I think Fulham's the better team. A little short of a price, though, on this, I think. I'm going to go with both teams to score. I'm going to go back to the well with the over on Spurs, who have righted the ship a tad on defense. But I think Fulham at Craven Cottage, they'll be ready to score some goals in this match. So we're going to go Fulham and Tottenham, both teams to score and over the three. Chelsea at Arsenal. Last win for Chelsea at the Emirates Stadium, where Arsenal plays, 2021. That's a problem. +350 for Chelsea, +265 for Arsenal, or I'm sorry, -125 for Arsenal. That's too short of a price. Arsenal not playing great. Yeah, they're pounding PSV right now, but that doesn't really matter. PSV not anywhere near the caliber of team that Chelsea has. Chelsea, young, inexperienced, but very talented. I think they're getting close to where they're going to be able to win a match like this, so I would take a shot with a Chelsea or draw here, getting 350 on a London derby. I think Chelsea have a real live shot in this game. I also think bookings will go over. If you can find about 4.5 bookings, I think there'll be at least 5 bookings in this game, possibly even a red card. This has happened quite a bit with these teams. It can be very, very testy. This is a massive rivalry, so I'm leaning Chelsea at the draw no bet, or the Chelsea or draw, win or draw. And then both teams to score, I think they'll at least have a goal in them, and then I like the cards over in that match as well. Cards or bookings, however your book may have it listed. And then Manchester United at Leicester City. It'll be Leicester City +310, Manchester United -120. And Manchester United, they haven't lost to Leicester since 2021. Leicester's lost 6 straight. Poor Ruud van Nistelrooy just can't get it going. Their last win was against Spurs. I think both teams will score here. I think Leicester will get on the board. Manchester United has not had a great, you know, clean sheet record. Manchester United on there, they're not very great at defending set pieces, but they are also pretty good at on their attacking on set pieces with Bruno Fernandes and company. So I think you could see a goal from each of them out of a set piece, maybe. Makes it 1-1. I also think it'll go over 2.5. I think eventually probably United gets the second goal and wins that game 2-1 or something like that. Last 4 of the last 5 in this fixture have went over the total, so over 2.5 looks like a good one. And then Liverpool and Newcastle, this is not a Premier League match. It is the Carabao Cup final. This will be on Sunday afternoon. This is at Wembley Stadium in England, and it's a 12:30 kickoff. And Liverpool, who were just bounced out of the Champions League yesterday, much to our expense. And it's amazing, is Liverpool is a team that I despise, but we had them yesterday and it didn't come through. Although I did bet PSG live because I noticeably saw PSG was having the better of the play for sure. Liverpool -155 in this match. It's a +390 on Newcastle. These games have tended to play under in the past, from what I remember, these Carabao Cup finals. And I think maybe an under is in the cards here. Newcastle hasn't won a trophy in like 1,000 years, and their fans are just dying for one. So Newcastle's going to be very buttoned up here. They maybe have a little bit of pressure on them, so that could work against them. I'm not certain that they can beat Liverpool, but you never know. Liverpool very, very hungover after a bad loss in the Champions League, a game that they get at Anfield. You're thinking they're going to win it for sure, and PSG goes in there and beats them. And PSG has been known to be not a tough team, and they went into the toughest place to play in England, and they beat them. So I think right now you're either going to see a Liverpool team that's really fired up and is going to come out just breathing fire, or you're going to see a team that might roll over and let Newcastle beat them. So nonetheless, I'm going to go under the 3 in the game. That's my favorite play in the Carabao Cup final, but I guess I'm going to have to – I'm probably going to play it in play, because I'm going to have to see how these teams play it out and what kind of mindset they're under, as Aston Villa with a goal against Bruges, making that now a 4-1 aggregate, and that'll do it for the Belgium club. Oh, and that's going to do it for us here on Better's Last Stand. Again, if you missed any of the picks, BLS_PRP is where you want to be. PineRoomStudios.com, Pine Room Studios on the YouTube page, at the Pine Room Studios on social media, BLS_PRP on X or Twitter for all the plays, as I just said. WatchdogNetwork.com, you can hear this show anytime, anywhere, wherever you are, from Belgium to Bournemouth to Melbourne to the Kalahari Desert, anywhere in between, you can hear Better's Last Stand by using the Watchdog, WatchdogNetwork.com link on your phone, device, whatever you need, it's there for you. So until next week, keep tabs on all the high school basketball. Wheeling Central games will all be here on the Watchdog Network. WVU basketball will be here all weekend long. Anytime the Mountaineers are playing, men's or women's, well, women's won't be playing this week, but they'll be in the tournaments next week. It looks like the men will be too. So we'll have those games on here for you as well on WatchdogNetwork.com. And we'll have any of the Big 12 tournament games for the men this weekend. So basketball, 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 along with a bunch of other great sports over the weekend. Hopefully you have a safe and wonderful weekend. Enjoy the nice weather. Best of luck in your wagers. And we will see you next week on Bettor's Last Stand. It's March Madness opening week. It's the biggest weekend of the year for college basketball coming up next week. So we'll talk about all the games. We'll have one day in the books by the time we progress through. Well, actually just the four playing games. But we'll talk plenty of basketball next week, talk some MLB and much, much more. If you have any feedback, reach out to us, BLS_PRP. Thanks for watching Bettor's Last Stand or listening to Bettor's Last Stand here on the Watchdog Network. We'll see you next week. Good luck.